Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Oklahoma Republican Frank Lucas, who joins us to discuss the end of the House Speaker race and what that means for the next farm bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Department of Agriculture announced a $1.3 billion investment in the new Regional Agricultural Promotion Program. The program will focus on promoting ag exports and will be funded through USDA's Commodity Credit Corporation. The news comes after Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow and Ranking Member John Bozeman asked Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack to use the CCC to fund this type of program. USDA also plans to use $1 billion from the CCC for a program to use American commodities to address global hunger. New numbers show food insecurity grew on a sizable scale in 2022. According to USDA's most recent Household Food Security in the United States report, nearly 13% of all households in the U.S. were food insecure last year, the highest rate since 2014 and the biggest year-over-year increase since 2008. The report says more than 13 million children lived in food insecure homes last year. The numbers corresponded with inflation driving higher food costs. Supermarket prices were up more than 11% last year. And finally, Louisiana Republican Mike Johnson is the new Speaker of the House. Johnson received unanimous support from House Republicans in a Wednesday floor vote, ending a 22-day stalling of the House of Representatives following the removal of California's Kevin McCarthy. Among the list of priorities Johnson laid out in a letter to colleagues this week are farm bill votes in December. Congressman Frank Lucas knows a little something about moving a farm bill as the chairman of the House Ag Committee during the 2014 farm bill process. But overall, he's just happy to have a new leader of the chamber and hopes the rest of the conference is as well.
It's been a real challenge, but Mike Johnson of Louisiana, who was the vice chairman of the Republican conference, has now been elected speaker. All Republicans voted for him on the floor. He is a very knowledgeable constitutional lawyer. He's been a member for a decade. He's one of those guys that everybody likes. I think he can pull us together. He's a real conservative. So we're back on track. We're headed forward again, I think.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the fact that he is a real conservative, and a lot of people hear that. And when it comes to farm policy, they might get a little nervous because sometimes those farm bills can get a little expensive, especially this next one, given the Thrifty Food Plan rewrite and a number of other things, potentially looking at a $1.5 trillion price tag. How do you expect he and other members of GOP leadership might react to that bill, especially knowing that some farmers are even looking for more support from this bill?
Well, one of the things about being Speaker of the United States House, we are all 435 members who represent our districts. But when you're Speaker, you're the first office mentioned in the Constitution. You're second in line to be president behind the Vice President of the United States. There's a broader responsibility. And I think Speaker Johnson understands that. Plus, most of rural America is represented by Republican members of the United States House. So I think we'll get a balance. Now, will he be cautious and frugal in the spending we do? Of course, but we have to be anyway. Many of the challenges we face were created by decisions, as you mentioned, like the administration dramatically pumping up food stamp spending. But we'll look at that and we'll make sure that the safety net is there. Because after all, doesn't matter how many resources are available for people to buy their food. If there's nothing on the shelf, it's for naught. This farm bill is going to be about making sure we can raise the food and fiber our neighbors need.
Mm-hmm. Headed into this process, what do you think agriculture, farm groups, producers, agriculture writ large in America should know about Mike Johnson?
Well, Mike's been around a while. He comes from a state that has a diverse set of agriculture. He has a personality that is actually very positive, very pleasant. Johnson's been focused on getting to know people and to work with folks, to work his way through the ropes. He doesn't have the scars and scratches and calluses other members have. But that's okay. Just think of him as a fellow who may not be a famous speaker, but he'll be a real speaker.
Mm-hmm. So then going forward, obviously, a bit of a three-week delay there as there was that search for a new speaker. Government shutdown deadline here approaching in mid-November. Appropriations work has gotten back underway since the new speaker was elected. What are you looking at in terms of a timeline to move appropriations bills, potentially consider a continuing resolution to avoid that shutdown? What do you think the next few weeks looks like with that pending November 17th deadline?
I think that's an accurate summation. Between now and the 17th of November, there'll be a huge focus in the House on passing our 12 appropriation bills. We've already passed several across the floor of the House. Now, the Senate's very proud that they passed all of their appropriation bills out of committee, but they haven't passed anything across the floor of the United States Senate. We're going to work frantically to move as many as we can to be prepared then to go to conference with the Senate. There may have to be another extension for the programs that are not appropriated after November 17, but that's just a part of getting there. Now, we get our work done, the appropriators go to conference, then Speaker Johnson's indicated he would like to see a farm bill in December.
We'll talk farm bill with Congressman Frank Lucas right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. New House Speaker Mike Johnson says he wants a farm bill to be considered in the House in December. And former House Ag Committee Chair Frank Lucas says for that to happen, a number of things need to fall into place.
First off, mechanically, think about the farm bill process. Whenever we get time, and we'll need several days on the floor, maybe part of a week, whenever that time is allocated on the floor of the United States House, think back probably 2 weeks, and then you'll have a markup in the Ag Committee to put the base text together. If that's placed in order, then think about a couple of weeks before that, probably all the drafting will come together and we'll see a work product that we can all look at. So once we know when we're going to go to the floor, I believe there'll be a comprehensive bill filed. I believe a couple of weeks later, we'll have a comprehensive markup, full House Ag Committee hearing. Then 2 weeks later, in an ideal world, we'll go to the floor. There's enough time for everybody to figure out, because remember, in most of the commodity title, in the safety net, so to speak, we're not rewriting policy. It's how do we make refinements to crop insurance? How do we make refinements to the price protection program's revenue? How do we make sure the conservation programs are still viable? We don't have to begin from scratch. We just have to improve what we have.
So you mentioned that timeline of, you know, maybe 2 weeks before floor votes, you might go to markup, and 2 weeks before that, maybe looking to introduce some text. Now, granted, I'm doing some state school math here, but that leads me that about a 4 to 6 weeks process, and we're about 4 to 6 weeks from December right now. So that might lead to legislative text being dropped in the next week or two. Is the committee ready to do that?
Potentially. Now, remember, I'm the former chairman of the committee. So Chairman Thompson is the driving force in the committee, and I am a strong supporter of Chairman Thompson. I've chaired enough committees and dealt with former chairmen. I'm going to be helpful to my chairman, Mr. Thompson. Mechanically, yes, it's getting tight, but it's doable. And if we have to move over into January, then we do what we have to do. Remember, the first critical element that's impacted by the Farm Bill expiration is actually dairy policy. And that's the last day of December, 2023. Some people say Democrats don't care about farm policy. One of the big milk producing states is, I believe, New York. And the majority floor leader of the United States Senate, Mr. Schumer's from New York. We might have an ally whether he knows it or not.
So let's get in the weeds a little bit here as we wrap up our conversation. We did see this week a number of the Democrats on the House Agriculture Committee sending a letter to committee leadership saying they would like the Inflation Reduction Act funding to be left alone and to be left where it is rather than repositioned, reallocated within the Farm Bill as some folks are considering. How do you expect the committee's Republicans to address that issue?
I think we'll look at all of the monies involved in the Farm Bill process. I think there'll be a major effort to craft a document that the committee can pass out. We'll still have to go across the floor, and it'll be subject to amendment and changes there. And then we'll go to a conference committee. Farm bills are still one of the pieces of legislation that are done under what we call regular order. Committee work, floor work, conference committee report. So the document we start with may not look like the final thing that's ultimately signed into law by the president, but we're going to grind it through and we're going to get there. By the way, also remember, we have an incumbent president who's running for re-election. All presidents running for re-election like to sign farm bills. We just have to get one to the desk.
Wrapping up here then, Senator Stabenow told us this week that she's identified $4 to $5 billion working with Senator Schumer over there. And she, you know, she's been adamant that she wants to leave the Climate Smart funding in the IRA where it is if it's going to be brought it within the farm bill. That $4 to $5 billion figure, does that address the needs, you think, of the additional resources that might be needed for a farm bill?
I don't know that I can answer that question in this moment. It'll become a lot clearer when we're in committee markup and when we're on the floor. And the process then ultimately of getting to conference with the United States Senate, that's not a checker game, that's a chess game. There are a lot of pieces will be moved around as we get to that final bill that's good for rural America and American consumers.
Congressman Lucas, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure as always.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pegel walks us through the lay of the land on a growing legislative issue in this week's Map It Out.
Restricting foreign ownership of American farmland has become a hot topic in recent years. More states are beginning to pass bills to limit or ban certain foreign entities from owning or investing U.S. land in response. According to information from the National Agricultural Law Center, a dozen states took action this year. States in red have some sort of foreign ownership restriction. States in green allow foreign ownership of agricultural land, and states in blue do not have a law allowing or banning investments on private land. All told, 24 states have laws in place on the issue. Much of the attention is paid to land acquisitions tied to China, but Canadian investors hold the most acres of any one foreign country. In fact, investors from 15 countries have more acreage than the roughly 394,000 acres affiliated with China. Noah Wicks has more in his coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who mapped the soybean genome? You did. Who's replacing the petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who created biodiesel that increased your income 63 cents per bushel? You again. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff, moving soy forward, moving you forward.
At Clean Fuels Alliance America, we're working toward a future of clean energy now that will make our members proud. We serve as the clean fuels industry's primary organization for technical, environmental, and quality assurance programs, and are the strongest voice for its advocacy, communications, and market development. With industry-leading programs and incentives, Clean Fuels Alliance America is actively moving the clean fuels industry forward toward a brighter future.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. We've got a couple of economists here with us today, and we're going to have a conversation about a wide variety of things impacting farm policy and farm production. And we're joined for that conversation by Gary Schnitke with the University of Illinois and Scott Girl with the American Soybean Association. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Gary, I want to go to you first because we did look, get some confirmation this week on some Commodity Credit Corporation funding to be used for trade promotion in the context of American agriculture. This is something that the Senate Ag Committee leader had been asking USDA to do, perhaps in lieu of additional farm bill funding for those trade promotion programs. Time will tell what that budget ultimately looks like in the new farm bill. But I want to ask you about $1.3 billion in CCC funding being allocated as part of this announcement. What kind of an ROI do you think farm groups can expect generally once that $1.3 billion is split up and used for market promotion?
Anything's better than nothing. And $1.3 billion is a significant amount. Obviously, given American agriculture, trade promotion is an important thing, and an important thing for all commodities, but particularly for soybeans, which has 50% of its production exported, and corn too, as those exports continue. So anything there that keeps those trade flows going is a good thing.
So we also had the chance to talk to Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow this week. And one of the things she told us was that she was concerned. She understands and appreciates this call for an increase in reference prices in this next farm bill. But she's also concerned that that increase could potentially lead to a trickle down of economic factors that would, in the long way, lead to increased cash rents on farm ground. Your thoughts on that line of thinking and the prospects of that coming to be?
Yeah, so cash rents are very highly related to returns to agriculture, and reference price increases could increase returns to various farm commodities. We would be less concerned about that for corn and soybeans because the reference prices are relatively low. And if we're looking at those reference prices coming into play, we have a lot more economic problems than just getting payments from those commodity programs. On other commodities, rice, peanuts, and cotton, those could most definitely play into higher cash rents on those areas where those commodities have base acres.
You mentioned that there is that relationship, Gary. I mean, is it what is the relationship? Are we talking a one-to-one reference price increase to, you know, penny-to-penny increase, or is there a percentage factor? How does the math typically work out there?
Yeah, so there isn't a lot of studies that have looked at the reference price program in particular. What they have looked at is the old direct program, and what they found there was roughly 35% of the funds spent on that program ended up in capitalized into rents on farmland and farmland prices.
Very good. Well, Scott, I want to bring you into the fold here because we had an article on our website this week and in our newsletter talking about the potential dollars and cents of a farm bill extension. Senator Stabenow saying that that's something she anticipates would need to be 1 year, something that USDA tells her just for the functioning of the commodity programs. But I do wonder if a farm bill is extended, in fact, for 1 year, at a certain point in time, you've done a lot of economic analysis on behalf of a farm group in determining farm bill priorities. If there's an extension for 1 year and things like Congressional Budget Office figures change and markets change, which would change the cost of a reference price increase, at a certain point, does that send farm groups back to the drawing board on their priorities?
I don't think it sends back to the drawing board. I do think it may change some of the finer points. But you're right. I mean, if we get a one-year extension, we'll be dealing with a new CBO baseline, and that's going to increase the scores or the cost of individual changes in the farm bill. And so what I think what would happen is a lot of the work that's going on the Hill currently among the ag committees, looking at the costs of various options, would potentially have to be redone to a certain extent to get the new scores.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. As producers across the country wrap up their harvest, American Soybean Association Chief Economist Scott Gerlt says the results are varied.
It's definitely been spotty. You hear that quite a bit talking to farmers just about how localized, even sometimes between neighbors, the conditions have been. The national average soybean yield, according to USDA at this point, is under 50 bushels an acre, 49.6. They started the year with a trim projection of 52 bushels per acre. So we're down a little bit from that. It really depends where you are. You can bring crop insurance into this. We are seeing a lower harvest price and spring price. It's quite possible for some of those farmers that are having some issues due to the drought that we've seen in various parts of the country to start getting into crop insurance indemnities.
As we look at the long game, Scott, for the soybean industry, obviously a huge amount of potential demand coming from the renewable fuel sector. Export demand could be growing through that program that was discussed earlier in this conversation, as well as other export promotion channels. A lot of things that could potentially really be adding a lot of new demand into the soybean industry. And wondering, how do you expect that that will ultimately translate to the market prices offered to producers if some of these new demand channels do indeed come online?
I fully expect that basis is going to get stronger, especially particularly in areas where they're building new crush plants or expanding crush plants as part of the biofuel expansion. There's going to be more local demand, and so they're going to have to bid for those soybeans. So I think the long-term prospects are good for farmers. This should be quite helpful to a lot of farmers in a lot of regions, especially in the northern plains, where they've typically had to export their beans. They've had pretty bad basis just because they've had to send their beans so far to the consumer. But that pattern could be changing for them. So it's pretty exciting opportunity for a lot of producers in a lot of areas.
Mm-hmm. Gary, I want to wrap up the conversation with you here and kind of circle back to that prospect of a farm bill extension that we were discussing with Scott earlier, and ultimately look at the producer impact on that, because there's been a lot of clamoring for increased producer supports through the next farm bill, but yet the current farm economy could be in effect with the current farm bill for another growing season, absent some kind of lightning speed congressional action between now and the end of the year. I wonder, what would the current level of producer supports, and obviously you can't tell me, nor can anyone, what the market prices will look like 365 days from now, or the production, or a number of factors, but what would an extension of the current level of farm supports mean in next year's farm economy?
Yeah, if we extend the farm bill, we would see essentially the same crop insurance program that we have now, or the same crop insurance program that we have now. That is the number one risk management program that most Midwest farmers at least list. And so they would be that program would be in place. We have new higher cost levels, and that's going to result in lower income. And hopefully that we won't get prices low enough that PLC makes payments. And hopefully we don't have low enough yields that ARC will make payments either.
Very good. Well, a lot of numbers to be crunched between now and the time President Joe Biden, presumably he is the president when the next farm bill is signed into law, a lot of numbers to be crunched between now and then. And Scott, Gary, we appreciate you joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through the implications of one country's decision on global trade in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Global rice trade is expected to decline this year and next year, in part because of India's decision to ban the export of non-basmati white rice earlier this year. 1 month after that ban, India also placed an export tax on parboiled rice. This chart shows how India's decisions impact global rice trade. You can see the forecast totals going down for both this year and next year. This year's trade restrictions are expected to pull down Indian exports both this year and in 2024, and contribute to a broader decline in rice on the world market. India supplies more rice than Thailand, Vietnam, Pakistan, and the U.S. The report shows India is expected to export 1.5 million tons less than originally anticipated, which offsets increased exports from some of those countries. Bill Thompson has an in-depth look at how India's rice export ban will impact countries around the world at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who mapped the soybean genome? You did. Who's replacing the petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who created biodiesel that increased your income 63 cents per bushel? You again. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
Looking closer. Seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House and Senate are scheduled to be in session. The National Retail Federation estimates consumers will pass out $3.6 billion worth of Halloween candy. And finally, the Sea of Blue Jackets will gather for the National FFA Convention Wednesday through Saturday in Indianapolis. We'll have all the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.